on Shabbos. I'll move it in. So what we covered so far was the Cholesh Yesh Bo Sakana case, right? The person who is in danger because of an infected tooth. I wanted to go back to something that we talked about last time within that, just to explain it a little bit more. We talked about it briefly in class, but I thought it's worth explaining. It's a bigger topic. Hello. The issue of, or the question of, what to do when dealing with an infected tooth, and we said that there are two different options, right? This rings a bell. So we said one option would be to drill into the gum and remove the infected pulp and drain. This was the gross part, right? And drain out any infected fluid. And that's one way to deal with it. And the other way to deal with it is just pull the tooth and initiate antibiotics. As the question was, which one is the better option? We said that patients generally prefer the first option because they would like to keep their tooth. But yeah, the question is, it involves more actions potentially in terms of cutting into the gum. Anybody remember what the answer was?
Do option one.
Do option one because that's what they prefer. But why is that? Why option one? You're correct. Right. The malacha is not d'oraisa, and we're talking about a patient who is considered to be dangerously ill because of this problem in their gums because of the infection, and so we do whatever their needs are. And that was the that was indeed the answer. So I wanted to go back to explain a little bit more about why it's d'rabanan, because it seemed like there was a little less familiarity with the concept of malacha shenit zricha legufa, and it's worth knowing about and understanding. So if you look at the sheet that I uploaded, there are just a few sources that relate to it and give us a little bit more clarity on this. If you take a look at the first source, the Gemara in Shabbos, people have it? Good? Okay. So Rabbi Abba says, HaChofer guma b'Shabbos ve'eino tzarech ela la'afara. Person digs a hole on Shabbos and only needs the dirt from the hole. Pater alea. So they're exempt from liability for having dug the hole. Now remember what we mean when we say pater, right? When we say exempt, that means? Usser, right. Midrabanan, it's still usser, but midraisa, you're not chayiv. There's no biblical liability. And this is the classic case of malacha sheinat zricha legufa. What we mean when we say, is that term familiar, right? Malacha sheinat zricha legufa? What it means is that malacha, when we talk about malacha on a biblical level, the 39 malachos, they are defined not only by their activity, but also by their purpose. And if you perform the malacha activity, but with a different purpose in mind, then it's not like you really need the malacha. What you're doing is just an activity that mimics the malacha, but the purpose is fundamentally different. So digging a hole in the Mishkan was for storage purposes, to put something into the hole. If you're digging a hole only because you want the dirt, that's called malacha she'ina tzricha legufa, malacha that is not needed for the actual malacha, but for some other purpose. So therefore, it's only a derabanan. So in our case, regarding drilling into the gums, our concern is that you are causing bleeding, right? That's our problem. Why is one chayev for causing bleeding? What malacha is causing bleeding? It's not one of the 39. So what exactly is it? You know, when you injure somebody, right? Not that you ever would. So one possibility is that it's under shochet. One of the 39 malachos is netilas neshama, taking a life, right? The case of, let's say, you know, killing a deer would be an example of that. And shochet is part of netilas neshama, is part of taking a life, and that prohibits not only killing, but also drawing blood from a creature which is alive. That's our issue. That's our problem. If you take a look at the second source, this is from a Tosfos in Maseches Shabbos. He quotes you a Rashi in the Gemara in Shabbos Kuvzayin Amud Aleph, which says, Chovel Bahen Chayev. One who wounds is liable on Shabbos. Mishum Dahavi Tolda Deshochet. It is a Tolda of, a descendant form of Shechita. And remember, Toldos are De'oraisas. V'chayev Mishum Netilas Neshama. You're liable when you cause something to bleed. You're liable for taking a life. Unetilas Hadam Hainu Netilas Neshama. Taking the blood is called taking the life. Kidichsev, when he quotes you a pasuk, Ki Adam Hu Anefesh. That pasuk is in a different context. But blood is like life. You're not allowed to withdraw blood from a living creature, as Gali says. The issue is netilas neshama / shochet. That's one possibility, yes.
Isn't that the whole thing of bloodletting?
Sorry?
Isn't that the whole thing of bloodletting?
What do you mean the whole thing of bloodletting? You would not be allowed to do bloodletting on Shabbos.
If they need it.
Well, if they need it to save a life, or if they don't need to save a life, what do you
need?
That's a different story. Then you override everything. Yes, that is true. As a general principle, please do not let blood for people on Shabbos. In case that wasn't clear at any point in the semester. Look, you got to clarify things like that. Put the leeches, away before Shabbos. That's really what it comes down to. But make sure they're accessible in case somebody needs them. Just, you never know. So that's one possibility for liability for causing bleeding. The other liability is a malacha that I think we mentioned at some point in the past, which is mifarek. Right? We talked about it with dash and schita, squeezing things out on Shabbos. We said that one of the malachos is you take grain, which has chaff, right, the outer shell, and then there's the actual kernel inside. And we said that if you crush the outer shell in order to get at the kernel that's inside, that's an av malacha on Shabbos. That's called mefarek. We talk about dush, threshing. So under that, potentially, according to the Rambam, is chovel. You're breaking apart the skin, drawing out the blood. So that would be the other way to look at this malach. We generally assume it's what Gali said, that it's part of this netilas neshama, taking a life. But the key for our purposes is that when you do this, when you take the blood normally, that's because you want the blood. It's an act of drawing out blood in order to use the blood. Example would be getting fluids from a chila zone, the sea creature that is supposed to be the source for tcheles. Let's say it is. Chila zone is, whether the chila zone that we know of now is a separate discussion. But the chila zone creature is used to get tcheles. So crushing it in order to get this fluid out of the chila zone would be an example of doing it in order to get the fluid. When you drill into this person's gums, anybody interested in going into dentistry, just out of curiosity?
What?
You were, until you talked about draining the infected tooth?
No, until I had to
take work. Got it. Okay. Yeah, that's an issue. Okay. Well, in any case, we have a recovering dentist then, present. But generally speaking, yeah. Bailey.
I just have a question about the mefarek thing. The issue that, like in this case, this example connected with mefarek is breaking the gums.
Yeah, you're breaking apart the surface of the gum in order to draw out.
To the blood.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. So normally, though, the malacha is where you actually want to draw out this liquid, which you're going to use for some purpose. Here, you're draining it just in order to get it out of the body because there's infection in it. And it's not really the blood you're actually getting out. It's the pus, really, that you're going for. The blood is just, casualty. But because of that, because you don't actually want the blood, therefore, this is no longer a de'oraisa. It's not the normal malacha. It's malacha she'ena tzricha legufa, and that takes it down to a derabanan. I give you an illustration of this in a separate area of halacha, which is important to know about. Even though it's not directly involved here, I don't know if any of you are involved ever in IV injections. Is that a thing? No.
Giving them?
Sorry, giving them.
Oh, no.
No. So, there are different types of injections, right? There are intramuscular injections where you inject just into the muscle, like it sounds like, but there are also IV injections where you need to inject something into a blood vessel, right? It's a vein, right? That's why it's called an IV, intravenous, right? Don't inject things into an artery. It's a bad idea.
Intravenous? I've never got that in my life.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's so cool.
Amazing. Well, we all learned something this year. We can check off her box anyway. So an IV injection, in order to do the injection, you have to insert the needle, but you need to make sure that the needle is seated properly before you're going to actually try to inject whatever the fluid is. So what you do is, after having, you know, poked it in, you then pull back on the plunger to draw out some blood from the blood vessel. That is arguably netilas neshama. You are, you know, if you do that on Shabbos, you're now violating a de'oraisa. When you inject something intramuscularly, it's not a de'oraisa, right? It may cause bleeding. It may not cause bleeding. It's not a guaranteed result. You're not trying to cause bleeding. So generally speaking, intramuscular injections are derabanan rather than de'oraisa. At most, derabanan. Maybe it causes a bruise. Maybe it doesn't cause a bruise. There's more to discuss regarding that. Maybe we'll do that actually when we talk about diabetes. Maybe we'll talk about diabetes injections on insulin injections on Shabbos. But the point here for us is some argue that an IV injection on Shabbos is a de'oraisa because you remove blood from the person. Got it? Not only that, it's intentional. You specifically try to remove the blood. You need to in order to make sure that the needle is seated properly. Yes?
But is this is Netilas Neshama a de'oraisa, specifically Shabbos, or is it de'oraisa in general? You can't do that in general. So what would be the difference in terms of doing it on Shabbos? If you're doing it during the week, then option one, you're bringing it down to Darabana. So what's...
Right, so the difference between Shabbos and during the week is that during the week, injuring somebody in the interest of medical treatment is not only allowed, it's required, right? If I have the opportunity, somebody has, you know, a gangrenous toe, and now that's a threat to their health, amputating is what I'm supposed to do, right? I have to convince them to go along with it. Unless you're talking about doing something for a parent, which raises other halachic problems, get somebody else to do it, whatever, but... Barring that, that's actually supposed to be done. On Shabbos, I have a separate problem of malacha. But the issue of chovel during the week, hey, don't injure people, is overridden by the fact that it's for medical treatment. So in terms of injecting this on Shabbos and drawing out the blood on Shabbos, Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg argued, yes, it's true, you are intentionally drawing out blood, but you still don't want the blood. It's not like you're going to do anything with it. And so he wrote that, therefore, it's malach hashein etzricha legufa, and it is a derabanan. Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach wrote notes on the tshuvos, the response of Rav Waldenberg and his Tzitz Eliezer, and agreed with him. In source number 3, I just brought you a small piece from the Tzitz Eliezer responding to Rav Shlomo Zalman. He says... regarding what he, Rav Shlomo Zalman, wrote on my book, volume 14, note 12, or not volume 14, chapter 14, note 12. Litzadeh lomar shegam ba'asiyas zirika lesol chavrid ein chiyuv de'oraisa, arguing that injecting into a vein does not involve biblical liability, because you don't need the blood. You don't need the blood at all. Tzviras hadam is actually usually a blood clot. I'm not sure why that's relevant there. But he's saying you're not using the blood. So that was what Rav Waldenberg wrote. Rav Shlomo Zalman wrote, Meir kvot haras harav es tesumes libi. He says, His Honor, as I translated in English, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, pointed out, Lo yadati my taima mistapek bedavar. I don't know why you're even unsure about this being malach hashen etzricha legufa. Hare enu tzarech hasadam ela kedei ladaz sheitzliach leftovach hashavrid. You don't need the blood other than to ascertain that you have successfully opened the vein. Veim kain, and if so, mehecha teisi yechashev kitzarech legufa. Why should this be considered tzarech legufa? In other words, Shlomo Zalman said, of course, this is only malach hashen etzricha legufa. Of course, this is only a derabanan. So this is not directly our case. It's just an illustration of the same point, which is when you draw out blood, but you don't want the blood, you're not using the blood, it's not being tested for something, it's not being used for some treatment or whatever it is, Therefore, it's only a derabanan, and that's why we had the answer that we had regarding, or one piece of why we had the answer that we had, that you could save the tooth and just cut into the gum and drain it, because what we're talking about is fundamentally a derabanan. It may be justified even if it's a daoraisa, but it's certainly justified if it's a derabanan. So if someone were at some point to ask you a question, I don't know why one would, but let's say someone were asking you questions about this topic, and someone asked you which option is the better option to do, or which option is okay between these two options for dealing with the infected tooth, and justify your answer, right? You know, this may be part of what you would hypothetically want to answer, right? Yes? Am I too dry this morning? Is that a too dry sense of humor? Yeah.
Two options would be like draining the gum and like taking everything out.
But leaving the tooth in place.
But leaving the tooth in place. And the second option would be taking the tooth out.
And then you can just treat with antibiotics.
Okay, so then if you're treating with antibiotics, that's a derabanan.
Yeah.
But if you're doing the first option, that's also a derabanan.
Correct.
So what's the difference between the two derabanans, and why would number one be better?
So the only difference really between the two at this point is that the first one involves more actions, right? Meaning there's more work involved in, I'm assuming that that's true, that's my understanding, in cutting into the gum in order to draw out the blood as opposed to just one action of, you know, pulling the tooth out. In terms of why it's better because that's what the patient wants, that's all. It's not from a halachic standpoint that it's better. Right. It's the patient's preference, yeah. Correct. Yeah.
The whole idea of that, the IV is only like, opening up the skin.
Yeah.
So, but would, like, therefore, you can't take blood on top. It's like,
was
not
it the idea that the IV is
like, it's only there to like open and then insert stuff into it, but then when they take blood, they actually do need it to test it.
Right. So, if you're actually drawing blood for testing, then you're in Daoraisa territory.
Oh.
It would seem. Yeah, then you're in a Daoraisa. I wouldn't know why it wouldn't be Daoraisa at that point. Yeah, Natalie.
Even if it wasn't a derabanan, would the patient's mental health come into account? Like their mental stability, find them going to like permanently take out blood and tooth?
Right. So mental stability definitely matters. But here we get into a tricky question, which is, what happens when they don't like something and they, you know, object to it, but it's something that happens and people live with it all the time, right? People lose a tooth. You know, I'm not polling people here in the room, but I think it's fair to say that most people have at some point lost an adult tooth, whether it's they've had their wisdom teeth removed or, you know, that's less visible to people, more painful. But less visible. People, you know, it happens and people go through life with it. This does become an issue that I was hoping to get to this semester, but as the days go by, I think it's less likely. I wanted to get into the Kavod HaBrios discussion because it's an interesting discussion in its own right. We say that human dignity overrides Isurim Derabanan, but the question is, what defines human dignity? You know, someone says, I need this, but nobody else would care about it. Is that really something that would override a derabanan? So there's a lot to discuss in this regard, not to mention how you break it to the patient. But overall, you know, our general principle is that something that is not a factor for most people is not, you know, we're not now going to be concerned about this person, barring knowledge that really this person is unstable and this could really be an issue. Ray, you had your hand up? Or
no.
Sorry.
Sorry, I'm still confused about the IV. Situations where there aren't, you are drawing blood in order to use for some purpose. So isn't that
what do you mean?
No,
but I'm not using the blood at all. Meaning, this is why Robert Waldenberg had a question. I think he's asking your question, which is, I need the action of drawing out the blood. I need to see that the blood comes out in order to be able to go ahead with the injection. So in that sense, I need it. But what Rav Shlomo Zalman is saying, and what Rav Waldenberg had, you know, intuited as well, is that that's not called needing the blood. needing the blood means I actually am going to use it for something. Not just that, I saw that it came out. Yeah. Okay. So that's all just a review note from last time. We moved from cholesh yeshbo sakana with infected gums into the case of sakanas aver and the issue of losing an adult tooth and whether losing an adult tooth qualifies as danger to an aver. We gave two arguments against saying it's sakanas aver. Anybody remember what those were? Yeah.
Tooth isn't an
aver. Right. And?
Oh, still me?
Yeah, still you. Right. There is no dysfunction here, whether that's because we're looking at the jaw and you can chew without one of your teeth, or because false teeth are a very good option, and therefore, even if I look at this tooth in particular, that can be replaced. Arguments in favor of saying that it is sakanas aver. Yeah, Natalie.
Like all the teeth are aver.
Right. And the jaw will not function the way it's supposed to, right? Or you're just not going to be able. Yeah, Ricky.
Then obviously they're needed if they're dead.
Well, that's not necessarily true. People live without all sorts of body parts.
But if like, someone doesn't have a tooth, they usually get like a false tooth.
Right. That's true. But that tends to be for, well, not exclusively, but often for aesthetic purposes, as opposed to they won't function. They just don't want people staring at the gap in their mouth and asking them questions about it. Yeah, I mean, that's what we've been discussing, is that. The reasons to say it's not sakanas aver, as Ayala just said, are either because aver is very narrow in its definition. It's what we call an aver in halachic sources, and tooth is not listed. It's just a very technical argument. Or because there's no permanent dysfunction that's going to come from it because you can chew your food. A person who loses a tooth, I think it is universally agreed, assuming they have the rest of their teeth, right? It's not like down to their last two. But otherwise, they're not starving. Like, they will be able to get by. How much dysfunction qualifies as sakanas aver? That's really what it comes down to. Whereas the arguments in favor of including this are, as we said, it's the jaw that we're concerned about, and the jaw will not function normally, and that's already enough to call this sakanas aver. Or, alternatively, because you really can't chew as well. You're really not able to chew as well, which again is going to vary depending on the tooth. Some teeth are very much involved in standard chewing. Not all teeth are involved in standard chewing. So, bless you. So that's the argument. Golly, am that
did
right?
Did we answer if reinserting a tooth is considered bone?
No, that's where we're going now.
Oh, because I wrote it last time. No, I
can't. Yeah, no, we started on it, but we didn't actually get into it. Yeah, right.
I was just going to ask about one of the arguments against the basic kind of statement, the corpse logic, where the tooth isn't connected to the body.
Right, that was something that we had noted initially, that in discussing it's not an aver, because when it comes to what's considered connected to the body for tumah purposes, the tooth doesn't, we said that the tooth doesn't count.
So it's that, and that someone could still function, have a functional jaw, even minus one tooth, those are the two arguments?
Yes, right. Okay, clear? We're good? So now we get into the question of reseeding the tooth. And what we had started saying last time is that apparently, and again, you know, talk to somebody who's on the medical side of this, but apparently you can reseed it within 30 minutes and it will take and you're able to drink. You just won't be able to eat through Shabbos until you're able after Shabbos to use paste and wires to actually fix it in place. And our question was, if you were to reseed a tooth, would that be a malacha of boneh, of construction, on a de'oraisa level? If it's a de'oraisa, then you're not allowed to do it. That would not be okay. On the other hand, if it's a derabanan, I can make the argument that if it's sakanas aver, then it will be allowed. Or even if it's not sakanas aver, it will be allowed. Just do it in an abnormal way. Right? There's a normal way to hold your tooth in your mouth when your tooth has fallen out, and then there is an unusual way to hold your tooth in your mouth when it has fallen out. I don't know exactly what that means. Maybe it's you hold it in place with your knuckle. I don't know. Something that is less, you know, convenient as a way to do it, and, you know, hasn't, like we talked about, an inferior way to do it, an inferior result. You don't want an inferior result. Just do an inferior way to do it. But that's what you would potentially do. Or I guess ask a non-Jew to sit there holding your tooth in your mouth. Good luck. Yes?
I remember asking this on Wednesday, but can you argue that this is a chana for Abtalmus on setting it there?
Right. So it would not be a consideration because that's only Derabanan to begin with. So if this is a Derabanan, then that's a Derabanan. Yeah. Yeah. So that brings us to the question of bonet on Shabbos, construction on Shabbos, and is that really a concern of ours? And that is a question of whether bonet applies to the human body at all. Meaning, bonet is building. I think of building, I think of the scaffold that was on the outside of the building, right? I think of like hammer and nails and that kind of thing. I wouldn't have thought of a human being in any way being subject to bonet. However, I have Gemaras that do. There's a Gemara in Shabbos Daf Tzadihe. You may have learned about this. I see at least a couple of people here have braided hair. Right? So you know about not braiding hair on Shabbos. And the idea that is called bonet. That is called building the whole thing with what Hashem did for Chava and all of that. So, yeah. Oh, you didn't? Okay, sorry. That's a thing. I'm sorry. Okay, so I will take the minute to say. Sorry. So, yeah, the idea is that when the Pasuk says, Vayiven es Hatzelah, that Hashem built the Tzela, the side of Adam that he had taken to make Chava, so you have this idea in the Gemara that what Hashem did was Hashem actually braided Chava's hair. And that's called an act of boneh. Yeah, so there are all sorts of commentaries on this, which I'm just going to refer you to. But Shabbos Daf Tzadihe Amud Aleph, for those who want to look it up.
Like,
sorry?
O-ring or something?
Right, so it is not O-ring. It is not weaving. Weaving is a unique malacha that doesn't apply to braiding. It's bone, which is admittedly strange sounding. But yes, it's a thing. There's another Gemara that talks about adjusting the vertebrae of somebody on Shabbos, on Daf Kuf Mem Zayin. So based on the fact that we use the term bone in relation to a human body, Rav Wozner, Shevet Halevi, in source number 4, makes the argument that holding the tooth in place can potentially be a deoraisa. It could be bone. Take a look at number 4. Mihu, however, he says, Ikar Chazaras Shein Nafal. He says, putting back a tooth that has fallen, Ulahadbiko Ulahashvisho Mechadash, making it adhere and take root anew, Yeraya de Afilu Iser Torah Yeshbo. That may even be a biblical prohibition. He refers you to Shabbos Tzadihei Amud Aleph, which I just referenced, Godelas Mishum Boneh, that braiding is Boneh, Vayin Shabbos Kufchav Gimel Amud Aleph, Shi Shabbos 123a, Le'enyin Asube Yenuka B'Shabbos, talking about shaping a child. That's a whole thing involving medicine that we don't practice, I think, today, regarding, like, literally, like, shaping the frame of the child on Shabbos. And Shabbos Kuf Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, which he quotes as well. Le'inyan Achzaras Chomrei Shedra Demachzi Kibona, restoring vertebrae to their position, being called Bone. Mikol Hanal Muchach Te'ika Geder Bone De'oraisa Biguf Ha'adam. He says Bone De'oraisa can apply to a human being. The Nishmas Avram quotes this and seems to agree with him. However, other halachic authorities are lenient. And the reason why they are lenient, and I'm kind of surprised no one already said this, is why would you be lenient?
Because
it's what?
Because
it's temporary. Because it's temporary. Meaning, you're sitting there with your finger holding the tooth in your mouth, any time you would take your finger away, the tooth is going to fall out. And it's not as though it's, you know, the tooth is rerooting during Shabbos. That's not happening. You know, hypothetically, if you sat there for the next however many days, you know, holding it in place with your finger, perfectly stable, you know, maybe it would work. But that's not what you're going to do. After Shabbos, you're going to take paste and wires and actually lock it in place. You're not going to just do this with your finger. So if you take a look at source number 5, Rabbi Dr. Avram Sofer Abraham quotes with Shlomo Zalman saying this is fine to do. Adam shekibel maka befiv. A guy got hit in the mouth. Right? A little bit of color to the case, not just like jumping into the tooth being lost. Guy got hit in the mouth. Ve'ekez enough lalo shein, and as a result, his tooth fell out. If he puts the tooth back in place and holds it there until he can get care by a dentist, yesh sikui tov shashen tashu v'tikalei b'chazara. Bless you. There's a good chance that it will indeed take root. Ach bitnai shehu, meaning hapatsua, yachzir es hashen limekoma toch hatzi sha'a mizman shenafla. But it's only going to work if he actually does put it back in place within half an hour from when it fell out. Im zekara b'Shabbos, so if it happens on Shabbos, shamati me'agon Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach Zatzal shemuter la'asos kein. I heard from Rosh Shlomo Zalman, you are allowed to do this. And what is this? In parentheses, he says, "Dahainu," meaning "lachzik es hashen b'mekoma ad shiuchal lahagia l'rofei shinai b'motzai Shabbos." Hold the tooth in place until you can get to a dentist after Shabbos is over. So he's telling you that it is that it is fine. And the Tzitz Eliezer goes even further in terms of permitting this. Apparently, there is a powder that can be used that will work to make it adhere for a brief period of time. It will not last long term, but it'll work for some brief period of time. So the Tzitz Eliezer of Waldenberg in source number 6 says you could even use that powder. He says, Kvar heshiv b'chagon zeh lahatir b'sefer shud har tzvi, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, Rav of Yerushalayim, already wrote to permit this. Odos shinayim tosavos shezazos mimekaman venoflos. He was not talking about putting back in a biological tooth. He was talking about somebody who has a false tooth and it shifts in its place and it falls out. And he wrote, shemuter lahad bikam benesinas avka agaga shinayim shayidei zeh heim nidbakim lechech. So he permitted putting some kind of a powder on top of the teeth that causes them to stick to the palate. It's only going to last for some hours, and therefore it's all right. Those who were here first semester, when we talked about tying things and making knots and stitches and all of that, remember that we discussed the issue of a malacha which will only last for a limited period of time. And the Tzitz Eliezer says, I also have permitted this powder. So you have a powder that can be used to make it last for at least some limited period of time. That's okay. Yes, Bailey.
My question is then to the braiding hair, because that's also technically temporary, and then to come out, you're not going to keep your hair in a braid for the rest of your life, because that'd be gross. So, like, how is that considered bona, but this isn't considered bona?
Right. So I think the answer to that question is probably that we are going to need to define what permanent means. Remember the discussion we had when we talked about stitches? And we talked about permanent meaning potentially as long as you need it to be in place as a potential definition of permanent. We also talked about whether 24 hours is your standard, right? Or the argument that up to a week may be your standard. So you'd have to get into that conversation, plus the question of, we also discussed this when we discussed tying knots and the stitches, the question of something which could last forever, it's just that you're going to undo it, versus something that's going to fall out on its own. Meaning, when you make the braid and you actually like knot it in or whatever it is that you do, it could last a lot longer than you're actually going to leave it in.
So if you secure it in a different kind of way, it could technically be allowed? Like, how you secure a braid is with like a ponytail, like with a ponytail holder.
Right.
And if, let's say I make a braid in my hair and I don't put a ponytail holder at the end, sometimes your hair is thick enough, It will hold the shape of the braid, but it'll eventually fall out as you walk, as you move, whatever.
Eventually is like in an hour, 4 hours?
No, like in like a half hour.
Proximity.
It depends on someone's hair.
So I didn't come in preparing to address braiding, and therefore I might be wrong, but I think that, no, I think you do have an argument there. I think
like
you do have an argument for leniency there.
If the reason you can't do it is because it's secure enough that it will last a long period of time, you're just deciding when to take it out.
That's a problem.
That is a problem. But if you don't put in the thing that secures it, and it's, therefore it's like loose, and it could potentially fall on its own, and it does fall on its own, I think that should be okay.
Well,
but I mean, I
then you've passed
anything.
It. All right, so I, because I don't like to
right.
just give an answer without having looked it up, so maybe I'll come back next time with a braiding sock. But the argument is definitely there. Why are we saying temporary is better?
Yeah. Like, why are we saying it's going to be okay because it's temporary?
Right, so this goes back to a much longer discussion from first semester about whether we say, number one, potentially, that all malachos, if they're done to only last temporarily, they're actually not called the malacha del raisa. Can you make that argument? Or do we say certain malachos, by definition, are meant to endure long term, and therefore if you do them only temporarily, then it's okay? Yeah. This comes up regarding writing. It comes up regarding tying a knot. It comes up specifically regarding certain malachos. So that's part of the discussion regarding writing.
So does this qualify with the same whole tooth falls out, or only part of it
falls out? By the way, sorry. Not you mean disappearing ink, not invisible ink.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
There is a discussion of invisible ink also, but that's a separate discussion.
Yeah.
Sorry, Hannah.
What happens if only part of the tooth falls out and not the full tooth?
So they crack the tooth.
Like it cracks, or like only like, because I know people like has decay or whatever, only part of it will come out.
Yeah.
So like, would you treat it the same, like put it back?
I would think. I mean, I don't know medically whether that works. But what would be the difference? Why would I differentiate?
I don't know. I feel like they're saying, you know, very specifically when the whole tube of the knot.
I mean, they're dealing with practical cases that came
right.
to them. So that's the case that was in front of them. I don't see a reason to distinguish, assuming that the impact is the same. Meaning, assuming that the powder that you're using is not going to make it stick, you know, permanently. Yeah. The only thing I want to make sure to note is that we're saying powder, not paste, in terms of holding in the tooth. We're not talking about paste. And the reason I say that is because making the paste can enter into problems of lush, right? Where you're taking some kind of a powder, you're mixing it with a liquid, and now it's going to stick together. That's potentially an issue of lush.
Not
lush. Oh, could you end up in a smearing situation? Maybe. Maybe. Great. We'll make it worse. Don't make a paste. That's the moral of the story. Yes, that wouldn't be something to use.
Oh, is that the same as paste?
Yeah, I mean for the tooth. Yes.
But like not, you're not like making it.
Oh, you mean if it's already made, so then you're not dealing with a lush problem. That's true. So then would you be allowed to use a pre-made paste? So now you have the bonnet problem, right? It's going to last longer. So that's another reason not to do it. If it's temporary, so then the only concern that we now have is the concern of whether you're memareach. So what you would end up doing is dabbing it and using a bandage on it or something to smear it, maybe. Yeah, and it's an interesting question. Generally, it doesn't come up because we just don't have a pre-made paste. They usually make the paste on the spot.
My grandma has like
for her dentures. Ah, interesting. I would definitely advise before Shabbos, if possible. But yeah. Yeah.
This is all discussing if, like, we're saying you can do all these things based on if, like, a tooth is some kind of favor. But if it's a foolish ink or something, or if it's just like, oh, my tooth fell out on Shabbos, like, I got hit in the face and, like, my tooth fell out on Shabbos, that's not, like, an injury to, like, your head, to, like, it's not a Pekuach Nefesh thing, but it's also not, like, if we're saying that.
Right, so that's the big question.
Would you be allowed to do? Would any of this be allowed?
Right, so once you remove the idea that this is sakanas ever, you're right. It doesn't naturally default to be cholesh ein bo sakana. you could make, though, one argument which I was talking about with Natalie, which is the Kavod Habrios argument, which will override a Derabanan. You know, if you have somebody who loses an adult tooth, and I'm not up on state-of-the-art in terms of replacement teeth and what they're going to look like and whether that's going to be an issue. But if you have somebody who is a young person, they're a teen, you know, they're in their teens or early 20s, and they lose a tooth and now are looking at an entire life like this, and, you know, there's a traumatic element to it, maybe you could argue to override their abundance for that reason. That might be a justification. But again, that's the question, is what's the state of the art on replacement teeth? Like, are they really, like, you can't tell the difference? Maybe.
Like, if you give us a case, like this tooth fell out, or something, like, how would we know how to respond in terms of what we would be allowed to do? Because it depends what it is.
Right. So my answer would be, you have to be able to justify your answer. In other words, make the argument that this is Choleshen Bosakana. Make the argument. I mean, we haven't done Kavod Habrios as a topic, so it's not something that I would expect anybody to be able to address. Yeah. Okay? I think I'm going to give a short break. We move from Choleshen Bosakana potentials. I mean, not Choleshen Bosakana, sorry. Sakana's Aver potentials. To Cholesh She'ein Bo Sakana. In order to make Cholesh She'ein Bo Sakana simple as a case, we're going to use 4-year-old children as our examples. Well, they're not always, because we did have the view that that it's only as long as they're drinking milk, you know, sorry.
I thought they debated about what age it is.
Right, that's the point. There is the view that says it's only as long as either they don't eat normal food, they're only surviving via milk, that kind of thing. Like we had different views. But I'm using 4-year-old children as my example because I need to make sure that I'm talking about a child who actually has teeth. So I don't want to start with them too young. I would just work with the assumption that they count as Cholesh She'ein Bo Sakana. We're working within that view because the main point that I want to discuss is not so much how somebody gets to be a Choleh She'ein Bo Sakana as what do you do for somebody in Choleh She'ein Bo Sakana situations. So the cases that I want to deal with are numbing a toothache and pulling a loose baby tooth for someone who qualifies as Choleh She'ein Bo Sakana. Clear? Correct. Because a toothache for an adult, you know, is generally speaking going to be in the realm of mechush. Yeah, maybe it'll rise to the level of mitzas choli if, you know, it's a function of something being, you know, bad. Something bad is going on. People have toothaches for different reasons. You know, if a person has a toothache because, you know, they have a cavity inside, you know, maybe you can call that a mixas choli person. But it's certainly not Choleh She'ein Bo Sakana until they reach a point where they're bedridden or their entire body is in pain. Yeah, I hope they're not in that situation. So, I mean, there to be clear, there is such a thing. We could concoct a case, if we had to, of Choleh She'ein Bo Sakana with a mouth problem. But then the treatments become more complicated, and I'm not looking to get into more complicated treatments. So you're dealing with a toothache. We've said that we allow medication for a Choleh She'ein Bo Sakana. So what you can do, since you're dealing with Choleh She'ein Bo Sakana, is just give them a painkiller, right? What we call in fancy language, it's in source number 7, oral analgesics, right? As I explained in parentheses, painkillers to be swallowed, right? That's state of the art. Like that's a simple way to deal with the problem. But I wanted to also break out another topic that comes up because it has many halachic ramifications, and that is, what about a topical analgesic, something that you would put onto the spot that would potentially numb it and remove pain?
Well,
not a memorayach discussion. Sorry? It's a liquid. Sorry?
Oh, I was going to say a liquid contains a memorayach. What is that?
So, right, I mean, total absorption potentially, but in any case, we deal with liquids when we're talking about these things. We're not talking about something that's a, you know, a cream. So this can come up with a toothache. It can come up with a canker sore. It happens. And the question is, what are we able to do for this kid? Specifically, would you be allowed to take a Q-tip and dip it into whatever this liquid is, and then apply it to the spot? What would you say?
No.
I've got a no and a yes. All right, we're on.
Then you're not the one doing it. So it's
the
wait, you're not the one doing what?
You're spreading it.
You've already told me. You're already telling me that my problem is spreading. Who says my problem is spreading? What's the problem? You don't think memorayach is an issue because it's a liquid, so then what would be an issue? Yeah?
Oh, I
was going
to say why I don't think it's an issue.
Ah, no, I want someone to tell me why it is an issue. Natalie.
It depends what you're using to apply it. Because it's going to absorb it.
So, right, so the issue is absorption, right? Meaning you're using something that absorbs whatever this liquid is, and then you press it on the spot and it emerges from it. Is this a problem of schita? Of squeezing out. That's where the question may come up. No, if you use your finger, there is no issue of schita. That is correct. But the case I gave was a Q-tip. Maybe. Well, that's what we have to discuss. Danielle, you were going to say? No?
I was just going to say
medicine. So, medicine isn't an issue because I'm on a chol hashem bo sakana. So, they're allowed to use that. There used to be a way around all of this. They go back to our discussions about medicine and machal briyim when I was a kid. So if you had like a sore, like on your tongue or something like that, or sore gums, so they would take whiskey or brandy and they would just, you know, apply that. But they don't do that for children anymore, which is probably on the whole a good idea. But back in the day, that was machal briyim, and therefore there was no, you know, medicine issue to speak of. But are you allowed to use a Q-tip for this? That's the question. So the Orcho Shabbos and Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa have concerns, and they have a particular way they want you to use the Q-tip or cotton ball or whatever it is. Take a look at source number 8. This is the Orcho Shabbos. I've mentioned Orcho Shabbos before, I think. Yeah? Okay. So Aser lehishtamesh betzemer gefen tavul binozel. He says, you're not allowed to use cotton that is dipped in a liquid in order to clean a wound and the like because of the prohibition against schita, squeezing it out. And you're also not allowed to use for this purpose the kisem. Kisem is often a splinter. It doesn't mean a splinter here. It means some, you know, thin piece of wood. Or whatever your, you know, rigid material is, sheyesh barosho tzemer gefen, which has cotton on the head. Umnam, however, mutter lishpoch nozel agabaya petza ulakancho, but tzemer gefen yavesh. What you could do is pour the liquid on the spot, and then just wipe it using the cotton, because wiping a surface is not something that's going to cause it to then absorb and squeeze out. Right? If you really believe that was a problem, you could never use a towel to wipe a counter. You'd be, you know, in serious trouble. So what they're saying is, we want you to pour the liquid on the spot first, and then use the applicator, whatever this is, to wipe it around. Yeah.
This might be a stupid question, but how do
Boy. My first of the semester. Yeah.
How do you squeeze out the liquid? Like, if you squeeze out the liquid, does that not also constitute squeezing? Because otherwise, how would you do it without getting it everywhere? Like, how would you pour it precisely? Versus a Q-tip, you just dip it and put it on.
Right.
If it's in a bottle, you would have to squeeze it in some way so that it's, like, smaller.
Right. So what you might have, and I think a lot of them do, is have some kind of a syringe. You know, and you draw it out. There's nothing wrong with using a syringe to draw it up and then to, squeezing is an issue specifically where the liquid is said to be absorbed in the material. When you're talking about a syringe where you can see it independent of the thing, it's not called absorbed. Yeah.
Are you supposed to pour it without getting everywhere?
Right, so that was just what Francesca was asking, and my answer was use a syringe.
So
Yeah, that's usually the way they have anyway for these things.
I still feel like it's going to, like, especially if it's in your mouth.
No, I mean, this is design. Like, it's designed having nothing to do with Shabbos. Like, that's the way they sell them. They sell them these little bottles, and you there's a little bulb at the top. It's a dropper, right, a dropper. That's the term. Not a syringe, a dropper. They you squeeze the bulb, and that creates the negative pressure, right? Draw it up, and then you just squeeze out a couple of drops on the spot. It's very controlled. It's not like a thing. They, however, Rav Asher Weiss says none of this is a concern. He says, I've tested Q-tips, and it's not a thing. He says it's not a thing for two reasons. One reason is because of the tests that he ran, and the other is because of a Gemara in Shabbos, which I didn't actually bring you here. It's a Mishnah in Shabbos, but I brought you the result of it here. And that is, we talk about using a towel or a cloth or whatever it is to soak things up, or a sponge, that's the word I wanted, using a sponge to soak things up. We differentiate between where it's a straight sponge, an absorbent material, and where it's a sponge that has a handle. Right? You've learned about that? There's a Mishnah in Shabbos that says that if a sponge has a handle, then schita is no longer an issue. We're not going into this at length, but it's a Mishnah in Shabbos. It's Perech Chaf Aleph Mishnah Gimel, for those who want to look it up. It's Shabbos Kuf Mem Gimel Lamed Aleph. And there's a debate as to why it works. Rashi and the Rambam say the reason why it works where there's a handle is because you won't actually squeeze out the liquid. That's one approach. The Ravid says that's not why. I need to make sure to explain this first. The Ravid says that's not why. It's because it's like you're pouring liquid from a pitcher. In other words, we view the handle that you're holding as being like the pitcher, and the liquid now, when you press down, that comes out of it is like water pouring out of a pitcher. Practical difference between those two positions is, what if I know I'm squeezing? Right? Meaning, I'm using a sponge that has a handle, and I press it down on whatever it is that I'm cleaning or wiping, and I know it's squeezing. So the Ravid will say, I don't care. It's still like it's pouring out of a pitcher. Rashi and the Rambam would say, no, now you have a problem. So the Heter, really, as far as they are concerned, is only that where you know you're not squeezing, but you want to be able to use the sponge because it's good for wiping things or whatever. Can I use it? You know, then Rashi and the Rambam will say that, yes, you're okay. So Rav Asher Weiss uses that regarding the Q-tip, as we're about to see. But you were going to say?
I was just going to ask about, you know, you're pressing down.
Right. So then, yeah, then that doesn't help you. But take a look at source number 9 from Rav Asher Weiss in his Minchas Asher. He says, V'chayotze b'davar legabe kismei oznayim. He says, similarly regarding kismei oznayim, which are Q-tips. That's what it means. Shehem maklos dakim shebekiseya makel melufaf tsemer gefen dachus. He says these are thin sticks which have at the end some compressed cotton. Nirashe mutter lehishtamish b'hem lachatchila. He says you're allowed to use those on Shabbos lachatchila. It's not a bidiyavet. Oh no, if you're stuck. He says it's fine. That's totally fine. Why? He says, number one, the normal use of these things does not involve schita. This is not like a sponge. This is not like a cotton ball. Because he says, look at a Q-tip. The cotton that's on it is compressed. It's not really absorbing much. It really would be useless in terms of absorbing and squeezing out, right? That's not why people use a Q-tip. It's not effective in that regard. And even if it could be that when you use it, it will result in schita, it's not intended. And it's not a guaranteed result. And further. Even with a sponge, we say if it has a handle, you're allowed to use it to wipe a surface. He says the body of the Q-tip is a handle for the cotton that's on the end. Veina mishtamesh nogea klal betzemer gefen, and the person who's using it is not touching the cotton at all. Ve'imkein, and if so, pashut demutar lehishtamesh behem b'shabbos. It's obvious, he says, that Q-tips are allowed to be used on Shabbos. That's Rav Asher Weiss's answer. Clear? Yeah, Natalie. Right, so what we have is a Mishnah in Shabbos. The Mishnah says that if you have a sponge that has a handle, you're okay using it to wipe things on Shabbos. That's your starting point. Now the question is why? What was the logic of the Mishnah? So I have Machlokas Rishonim. One school of thought says the reason why you're allowed to use it to wipe things is because you're not going to squeeze it out. Once you have a handle, you're less likely to squeeze out the sponge. Presumably because of two things, right? Number one, you can't easily squeeze it, right? Now there's a handle in the way. And number two, because what a handle does is it distributes your weight evenly, right? When you think about, like, if you think of, like, a sponge that has a handle on top of it, when you press down now, it works to distribute weight across it, and maybe therefore it won't squeeze it out as well. That could be, I guess, part of the calculation here. But that's the view of Rashi and the Rambam, is when you use it to wipe, then you're not going to end up squeezing it out. The Ravid says that's not the reason. The Ravid says once you have a handle on it, I view the handle as like a receptacle that's holding the liquid that's absorbed in the sponge. It's as though the sponge is sort of like inside a pitcher. That's the way that the Ravid is looking at it. And therefore, even if you do end up squeezing it out, he's okay. Because that's not called schita. As far as the Ravid is concerned, it's no longer called schita. I don't think we follow the Ravid, but that's his position. So if I know I'm squeezing, Rashi and the Rambam will not be happy. But if I'm just wiping and not squeezing, then I'm okay. So Rav Asher Weiss says, first of all, I don't think it's a problem because he says this is not likely to absorb anything and then cause it to be squeezed out. That's number one. And number two, even if that does happen, he says, you're using a handle when you hold it, and therefore you're allowed to wipe with it. So I have a double reason to be lenient regarding using the Q-tip, and that's the simplest answer. Then, those who are worried about applying this medication in the wrong spot or something, well, just use the Q-tip according to Rav Asher Weiss, and you're fine. Clear? Got it? Okay. So that's in terms of numbing the toothache. So it's a relatively straightforward situation and answer. What about pulling out a tooth, a baby tooth, that is loose? Right? Whatever reason, whatever happened to this kid, the kid's 4 years old, they shouldn't be losing the baby teeth, but they, ran into a wall, whatever they did. And now they have a baby tooth that's very loose, and it's bothering them. Are you allowed to pull it on Shabbos? What would you say? I yell it.
Maybe if there's no non-Jew doing it, there's no other weird way to do it.
Well, what's the problem in the first place?
The child's critical shame or some kind of a thought. But even if it's not bothering them, even if it wasn't bothering them, there still was the framework to be able to do it because the child's
You're still ahead of me. What's the problem with pulling out a tooth on Shabbos? What's the malacha?
You're uprooting it.
Uprooting it, which is what? You're right. Right. So one issue is the bleeding problem, right? Chovel, as you are causing bleeding, is one concern. We're going to go through all of them. I have three things. I don't see why it would be choresh. What is choresh doing
You're
here?
You're making a space.
You're thrashing in your mouth.
No, the plowing.
Yeah.
Does plowing specifically have to be two plants?
So we do compare human beings to trees. However, choresh is specifically in soil. Right. Choresh is specifically in soil. There is a discussion about whether it can be bona if it's in a house and it's a useful groove or something like that. But I don't think even those, malachos of braiding and shaping vertebrae and so on are not entertaining the idea that it's choresh if you cut a groove in somebody's skin. I don't think we go there. There is the issue of, yes, chovel potentially causing bleeding. That's one issue. Second issue is that it is uprooting a tooth, as has been noted, is okir davar migidulo. You are uprooting it from the place where it is growing, and remember that picking plants on Shabbos is not allowed. The same thing applies to things like nail cutting or cutting your hair on Shabbos. Yeah. Like
that's
that.
What it is?
Yes. Kotzer / Tolesh. Yeah.
Tolesh?
Yeah. Well, Tolesh is just plucking as opposed to Kotzer, which is cutting with a cutting implement. Yeah.
If this is a 4-year-old child. Who
yes.
Would this not be Pikuach Nefesh? Because the child can, well, it depends how loose the tooth is, but, Hashem Shalom, the child can choke on the tooth.
So if that's really.
It can fall out, they can swallow it, but,
It's an interesting argument to turn it into Pikuach Nefesh. Maybe.
When we were really little, my parents, depending on how loose the tooth would be, if it was super loose, my parents would have sent us a tooth without taking it out.
Right. I guess it depends a little bit on size of the tooth. What are we talking about for this baby tooth? But if it's a concern that they might choke on it, then yes, now you're in a Pikuach Nefesh situation. I would agree with that. But don't give that answer on a quiz. Okay. The other possibility that's suggested is very similar to the Kotzer problem, and I actually sort of went there a little bit in what I was saying, and that is Gozes. Gozes is shearing. And we'll talk about why Gozes versus, Tolesh in a minute. We're in a couple minutes. Tolesh is plucking, correct. So let's start with Chovel. The Magen Avraham is the one who mentions Chovel as an issue. If you take a look at source number 10.
Chovel for bleeding?
Wounding, yeah. Wounding, bleeding, yeah. So he says, Votsas Shein Malacha de Oraisa. He says it is a biblical malacha. It's in source number 10. Da chovel lerefua, because you are doing it for the sake of healing. And the reason he stresses that it's for the sake of healing is therefore it's not called mekalkel. It's not called a damaging type of a thing where you'd say, it's derabanan because it's destructive. It's not destructive. It's constructive, creating this this wound. That's the Magen Avraham. Because you don't need the blood?
Yeah,
you're asking the question about...
Saying, that's construction. You're building a hole. That's not destruction to get the dirt.
No, it's the other way around. The case of digging a hole is the malacha de oraisa, where you're doing the construction, where you want a hole. Where I don't want a hole, I'm not doing it because I want a hole. As far as I'm concerned, I'd be happy there was no hole. I just want the dirt. That's where you say it's malacha shen etzricha legufa. That's not the core malacha, yeah. So the Aruch HaShulchan is the one who says this is a problem of uprooting a tooth as okir davar migilulo, uprooting it from where it's growing. Take a look at source number 11. Akiras shein hava'av malacha de okir davar migidulo. You are uprooting something from the place where it is growing. And then last is the Avnei Nezer, who says gozes, it is shearing. Take a look at number 12. The Avnei Nezer, Rav Avram Bornstein, we've talked about him. He's also the Igle Tal, which we've used. Ube'inyan hanotel sheinim yechashev gozeis. As far as whether pulling a tooth is called gozeis, shearing. Yesh la'ayin. He says, let's examine this. De'beperek vav de'bchoros mishnah dalad, shnayim shenotlu mibehema, shinayim, I should say, excuse me, shenotlu mibehema, havi mum. He says, there's a mishnah in Bechoros which says that if you remove teeth from an animal, that is causing a blemish in the animal. When you're dealing with a bechor, a firstborn animal that is supposed to be brought as a karban, if you pull a tooth, that is called making a mum, making a blemish in the animal. Im kein yesh lomar, gufehu velo havi gozes. In which case, I would say that means a tooth isn't really considered to be part of the body, such that you would be called shearing here. This requires more explanation. I'm afraid that I'm rushing it, and I'm not going to do it well. So I'm going to pause here. and we'll pick up with that, God willing, on Wednesday. Fair warning, God willing, we will finish the dental topic on Wednesday. We don't have that much left. And at that point, there will be a quiz. Okay? Then after that, we'll probably go on to discuss diabetes. But we'll see, because I have to figure out at this point, do triage on what we're going to fit in before the end of the semester. So we'll see. Okay, thank you.